You're listening to the Net Mums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Alison Perry. Coming up on this week's show...
I actually laughed so... Because when I posted, I wasn't thinking, oh, this is going to get loads of comments and loads of people are going to recognise that and zoom in the photo. But Mark Wright wrote a really funny comment that Admin Stitzy wrote, Wixie boy, you got to trim the gangster. and I was laughing. And some of the comments in there from people like... You know, zooming in and all that. But look, I didn't plan on it. It was silly. And, you know, I've had a trim since. So, yeah, it's not like that now.
Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode. Now, I think that this week has been a week of firsts for the parent hosts of this podcast. For me, it's been a first residential for my little girl. So she's 8 years old and she's been done her first two-night overnight stay, which has gone, frankly, disastrously. I've had a call at 9 p.m. the first night and 10 p.m. the second night to go and get a weeping rest.
I think eight years old is so young, Wendy, to be going away. So I'm not surprised it's gone badly.
Well, she's the youngest in the class. So I think all the others are 9 and she's 8. So there's been weeping. And I believe that you too have been weeping this morning.
I've been weeping, but for another reason. My five-year-old twins, they're in separate reception classes, and one of them, it was their school assembly act of worship this morning, and so they were lined up at the front of the assembly hall and they all had a line to say and they all sang a song, and I was trying so hard to keep it together and not be that crazy crying parent at the back. It was very emotional, Wendy.
Now, I'm really hoping that today's guest, who is returning for not his second, but his third visit to the Net Mums podcast, hasn't been weeping. Alison, give us the...
Well, I think
blurb.
He has been weeping, because I was watching his Instagram stories earlier, and he was getting very irate over a non-stick pan. So let's hear. But two words to describe today's guest, Wendy: living legend, because Joe Wicks pretty much single-handedly saved the sanity of millions of parents during lockdown with his daily YouTube sessions, PE with Joe. As well as being a fitness phenomenon, Joe is also a dad of three with another one on the way, and he's a best-selling author with his new book, Fitter, Healthier, Happier, coming out soon. This new book is aimed at kids, and it's a look at the key ingredients to a healthy, happy body. Joe, a massive welcome back to the Net Mums podcast.
Hello, Alison and Wendy. Thanks for having me back. It's lovely to be here chatting with you again.
So before I ask our first question, why the non-stick pan rant? What's going on?
Yeah, I've been pulling my hair out a little bit because, you know, I keep seeing all this stuff about Teflon and, you know, when you see it all scratched up and it's sort of like, you can tell you're probably going to be eating some of that Teflon. It probably ain't good for you, right? So anyway, I thought I'll get some stainless steel pans, you know. I jumped on Amazon, I got a couple of pans and saucepans and whatnot. Anyway, I started just doing the basic eggs, right? Fried eggs, and it sticks so much. And you think, now I realise why they invented Teflon. But basically, I was getting wound up with it. And then I saw everyone said, oh, there's a hack. You got to really get the pan nice and hot. And you put a little bit of water on it. And if the water like goes into a ball and dances all over the place, then you know the pan's hot enough. And at that point, then you add the oil and it kind of produces its own non-stick surface. And it did work for the first egg, but when I put the other two in after, it just stuck again, and now back in the kitchen scrubbing it again. So yeah, I think non-stick's probably like the better one in the long run. It's probably less hassle.
I've seen that documentary about non-stick too, but I also, it's eggs on pans. Too stressful.
Impossible.
So hard, yeah. It's annoying, but I'm working around it. I reckon I'll crack the code soon.
So let's get it out of the way, Joe. Let's talk about PE with Joe, because you must be sick to death of talking about PE with Joe. But it's bloody incredible. Did you ever imagine that it would skyrocket you to fame like it did, or that you'd be doing it for so blimmin' long?
No, you know, I never get bored of talking about it because it was just my proudest achievement. You know, I love doing PE with Joe, and I felt like I was really living my purpose, and I know I got a lot of people through a difficult time. So although it's a long time ago, I still have such fond memories of it. And I'm so proud I got people moving through a difficult time. But yeah, I never had any clue how long it was going to last. Never knew how long and I was going to do it for. And also how many people were going to tune in on that first day. It was nearly 1 million live streams. So I was like completely blown away by it. And I did it every week for 18 weeks.
We were all desperate.
Yeah.
Just for something.
We got through it, didn't we?
We did.
We got through it. And your kids were about, what, were they 4 or 5 at the time, your children?
I had toddlers. They were like 18 months old. I had twins that were toddlers. I was not in a good place. Wow. I tell you what, though, I'm so grateful to you, Joe, but I've got to be honest. I just have to hear the phrase PE with Joe and I'm not okay. I think I've got PTSD and I think that you trigger me. So if I get through this podcast conversation in one piece, it will be something, I tell you.
I'm sorry. Yeah, a lot of people sort of started it, and in the end, they were like fed up of it by the end of the 18 weeks. But I mean, look, thanks for taking part anyway and giving it a go.
I wasn't fed up with you, Joe. Don't get me wrong. It was the pandemic that I was not okay with.
Yeah, true.
So there is another baby Wix on the way. Congratulations. Did you always want loads of kids running around? Were you always like, yeah, I want loads of babies?
Well, I come from a family of three boys, so I'm the middle child. And I love that closeness. I've got an older brother who's 18 months older than me, and there's a 10-year gap between me and my little brother, George. So, yeah, I've always visualised having a big family. I don't know, I do these events. So I do the Pee with Joe tours, and I do, like, massive workouts. And I love meeting families of, like, 4 or 5 kids, and there's, like, the teenager right the way down in height to sort of the 4-year-old. And, yeah, I just love the chaos. I don't like quiet. I don't like, you know, they're away for a week, and I really miss them because it's just so quiet, and I'm so used to having kids running around. And, you know, it is stressful. They annoy me a lot, but I also love them so much. I love being around them because I love seeing them learn, and, you know, I'm teaching them and they're evolving and growing. And it's like, it's wonderful just seeing that my personality and my sort of DNA is rubbing off on them a little bit. And I like that. I like that I'm raising kind humans, you know.
How does Rosie feel about being pregnant again?
Well, she's one of these people that doesn't suffer too much. She's pregnant, luckily. And I said to her, like, Rose, is this the last time? Do you think this is the last time you're going to be pregnant? Because if it is, we've got to enjoy it. This is your last baby. She's like, no, 100%. No way. I'd love another one. So, you know, I think she's just quite maternal like that, you know, and we do visualise having a big family. But who knows? Hopefully it will go to plan. We'll definitely have a break after this one. We've got to have a break because we've done 5-year-old, 4-year-old, 1-year-old, and now another one. Like, we've got to have a little bit of a break, I think.
Yeah, it's only fair on Rosie.
Take a minute.
But you asked your Instagram community, didn't you, to help you name the baby. I mean, that's a brave move. Did they come up with anything that you liked?
Well, there's been about 7,000 comments on that post because I just was like, you know, getting some ideas. And I said, you know, you go on these websites, but I thought someone out there might have a really unique name that I haven't heard. So there's loads of comments. I've had some funny ones, some silly ones, but I haven't really gone through the whole list. But yeah, I like the names that end in the E sound. So obviously Marley, Indy, Lenny, I like Poppy, you know, Daisy, those sort of sounds. So I don't know. There's loads of ideas coming out, but we haven't sat down together yet to do it.
Thing is, the British public have got previous. I give you Boaty McBoatface. So I'm not sure I'd listen.
What's that?
Oh, don't you remember? So the government was appealing for names. Was it a warship? Alison, it was a ship that they were appealing for names.
I can't remember what kind of ship it was, but yeah, it was a good few years ago now, wasn't it?
And they put it to the public vote, and the unanimous vote, the winning name was Boaty McBoatface. So that gives you all you need to know about the British public.
It's a risk.
How are the kids feeling about another sibling?
Yeah, they're good. Obviously, like, we've got 3 kids and they're all, like, so different in their personalities. But one thing I love about them is they're very nurturing, although they're fighting a lot and they disagree on a lot of stuff. But they're quite cuddly. They're quite tactile and they're always kissing Lenny and they look after her. They love carrying her and taking her into the other room and stuff. So I think they sort of like being nurturing to them. So I'm hoping the new baby comes along. I think Lenny, she's quite clingy. She really, like, she's always on me. She's always on Rosie. So I don't know how she's going to react to the new baby coming. But, yeah, they adapt, don't they, pretty quickly. And, you know, I've just got to spend a bit more time cuddling Lenny and looking after her and stuff so she doesn't feel left out when the new one comes along.
Yeah. Now, something that you do that I'm always super impressed with is how much travelling abroad you've done with your kids when they're so little. You know, I struggle just taking my kids to Bognor, never mind, you know, some far-flung destination. What are your tips on doing that and staying sane?
Well, I'm really fortunate I can travel, you know, and I've always loved it. Even before I was the body coach and I was a skint student, I always used to blow my student loan on travelling because I'm quite nomadic. So I've always loved travelling and I always didn't want to give that up. You know, when I met Rosie, obviously we didn't have kids, we could travel. It was amazing. But I said to her, like, when we have kids, I don't want to give that up. Like, that part of my life and that part of adventure that I live for, like, we got to keep going. So yeah, like, as soon as we could, we got the kids on a plane. We took them obviously we go to LA sometimes. We've been to Costa Rica and we've done Australia and stuff as part of a work trip. So yeah, we've jumped on planes, you know, we've gone on long haul international flights. And I'll be honest with you, like, it's not a fun part of the journey. That's the hardest part of it, right? But when you just accept it and you just take it on the chin and you go, right, this is about me distracting my kids for 10, 11 hours on a plane, giving them snacks, you know, all the rules go out the window, snacks.
iPads.
You know, iPads, movies, games. We get Dobble and, you know, Uno. It's like hour by hour almost. And so it is stressful and it's a long journey. Now we've got three kids. We're outnumbered. We don't have nannies. We don't travel anyone. It's just me and Rosie. But, you know, it's part of it. And we know when we get to the other end, we're going to have a lovely hotel, a lovely, you know, lovely place to stay. And we're going to have two or three nights of jet lag, which is also a laugh. But when that's done, then you have a great time together. You have a wonderful experience. You're in the swimming pool. You know, you're doing like nice restaurants and things. So it is, the traveling's the most anxious part of it. But if you just take it in your stride and be more relaxed about it and accept that it is going to be a long day, once you're there, it's worth it. It's always worth it.
I traveled to Florida when my youngest daughter was about 14 months old, and one of my friends recommended that you so you have lots of little presents wrapped up, really tiny things for like every couple of hours of the flight, and you wrap them really tightly with lots of sellotape so it kills a bit of time opening them. And so I did this and it was a great idea, and she said what you do is take a pot of Play-Doh that you're going to sacrifice because you know it will get messed up and you just bin it at the end of the flight. Worst thing.
Right.
She got Play-Doh.
Why was it the worst thing ever?
Can you imagine? There was Play-Doh on every surface of that plane seat. Oh, and me, because she didn't have a seat. She was on my lap. Never again. Don't take Play-Doh, Joe. Don't do it. It's a disaster.
Yeah, no, it's a mess. You know, you look round now and like the floor is at a state. I throw my kids on the floor and let them sleep, but they always tell you
yeah,
often
they do.
Like, we get the bulkhead seats and I try and sort of stick one on the floor and they don't like it. But yeah, luckily Lenny will sleep in the bassinet sort of thing. But yeah, look, it's stressful, but you should never give up traveling, because as a family, like, you think about your memories as a kid, like, it's the thing you remember the most. It's where you absorb culture, you make friends, you have memories, you bond as a family. So, you know, if you can, like, try and do a little bit. Even a weekend away in the UK is still beautiful. It's still a wonderful thing to do.
So we've just had Mother's Day. What did you do to spoil Rosie?
Well, my mum actually came round on Mother's Day, so we had a little sleepover in the evening. But I just took Rosie for a nice lunch with the kids. So it's never a calm. You know, when you go for dinner with kids, like, you don't get a chance to talk. It's pointless. So really, it's like, get there. You know, you've got... We don't really have the screens at the dinner table. So we have, like, you know, your Dobble, your Uno, we have colouring books. And it's just basically, we're just distracting the kids while we eat. We scoff our food, then we go home. It's only when you go out with your wife without your kids, you go, oh, my God, we actually have a lot in common. We can talk. We can interact. I can have a conversation with you. But you just don't... When you've got a 4-year-old, a 5-year-old and a 1-year-old, you don't get a word in edgeways, ever. They don't get it.
I'm so glad to hear, though, that you have the same experience as me, because, yeah, when I go out with my kids, at least really is like you're just entertaining them. And if you can shove some food in your mouth in between, then you're onto a winner.
Yeah, we always laugh about how, you know, I'll try and say something to her and I'll be like, I'll just shake my head and go, what's the point? I'll speak to you later. And then by the time you get to bed, you forget what you're going to say. So, like, you just go days and days about getting your list out of your mind. But...
Do your kids ever do that thing where, like, you're having a conversation with Rosie and they're trying to interrupt you, and then when you say to them, right, okay, what is it? They've either forgotten or it wasn't actually anything at all. They're just trying to get your attention. They've got nothing to say.
Oh, yeah. All the time, yeah. That's just part of it, especially with my little boy, Marley, because he's always so excited and stuff. But, yeah, you know, it's one of the joys of parenting, isn't it? You just got to accept, you know, you're not going to talk to your partner for a few years. It's fine.
Oh my goodness! Like, you seem like a pretty chilled dad. You know, when I've seen, like, you know, on your Instagram stories, you're there cooking with them and, you know, chatting away to them. You seem really chilled out. Is that accurate? Because I kind of think that even with super chilled parents, there's always things that wind us up. Like for me, it's stepping on a random little toy that they've dropped and haven't picked up, and, you know, not tidied away. It really, really winds me up. What are the things, even as a super chill dad, what are the things that wind you up?
Yeah, well, look, I try to be patient as much as I can. That's what we try and do as parents, be kind and compassionate. But there's definitely things that I struggle with. I grew up in a very chaotic home, right? So my mum had extreme OCD. Like, I'm talking deep cleaning the house 3 or 4 times a day. So I couldn't leave my shoes anywhere. I had to iron my bed. I had to iron my bed sheets. So I had to like fold everything away. So I'm quite relaxed around that sort of like mess. And I don't mind a bit of chaos and mess around the house because I think it's part of, you know, it's a part of being a kid and mud and dirt. And I've let all that go. Like that part of my personality, I just think if you scratch something or you write on the carpet or if you've drawn on the sofa, I just don't care. I let it go. And with the kitchen as well, like, you know, it's messy. There's always going to be mess. I get them making pasta.
No, it's not.
Like,
it's dead
porridge.
Tidy.
No, it's always messy because I'm either cooking or cleaning because I'm obviously making recipes for Instagram. But, you know, the hardest part of it for me is this whole thing around gentle parenting, right? Like, I was shouted at as a kid so much, you know, doors were slammed. It was a very aggressive confrontation, not physically abusive, but verbally abusive and shouty house. So I really try to be a different parent. So when my kids are whinging and arguing and fighting and it just goes from 0 to 100, my stress levels got really high. My cortisol goes really high and I want to scream and shout. So in my head, I'm screaming and shouting at my kids, but I try my best to kind of have a breath, trying to sort of have a moment. And then I obviously try and react differently, but no, it doesn't always happen. Sometimes I'm in the car and they're screaming or, you know, I'm trying to get Marley ready for bed and you do all those things. You do all the kind, gentle parenting things and it doesn't work. Mm. And then eventually everyone has a breaking point. And even Rosie, who is way more calm and patient than me, she shouts and screams and we feel terrible, but it's part of parenting, right? You have to just acknowledge it and accept it and apologize and let your children know that it's okay to, you know, sometimes lose your temper, but you can regulate and you can talk about it and you can actually apologize. But yeah, for me, it's the whinging and the whining and the uncontrollable, irrational meltdowns over like the smallest thing. Like, oh, you gave her that bowl or you gave me 5 blueberries and she got 4 and all that sort of stuff. And it's relentless, isn't it, really, in the fighting?
It's so relentless. Yeah. But then that is because I'm the same as you. I grew up in a household that was very, like, you know, shouty and, you know, very verbal. But yeah, the reason that you find that difficult is because you weren't allowed to do any of that stuff when you were a kid. And so I also think our generation of kids are so lucky that people like us are trying to reprogram the way that we're parenting and shouting in our heads, but trying not to shout out, you know, at our kids. They're so lucky.
It's hard though.
Yeah, we're the first generation of like gentle. If you think about, you know, the psychology around child learning, development, and understanding, you know, how we interact with children, it's changed. It's new science because, you know, in the old days, it was like, you know, shout and control your kids and, you know, make them do what you need them to do. But, you know, we know now that doesn't necessarily work. So, yeah, I think being a kind, gentle, compassionate parent is exhausting. Being a shouty parent and sticking in front of the TV and just going, oh, piss off, get out of the room and slamming the doors and walking out, like that's easier. But obviously, it's not going to teach your child to self-regulate and their emotions. And then they might become aggressive teenagers. Because me and my mum, I remember we used to slam doors in each other's faces. And I'd punch walls as a teenager and that. And I don't want my kids to ever be like that. I don't want to see my children be like that. And so for me, I'm trying to be a better role model. I'm trying to demonstrate that even when I'm stressed, I can regulate a little bit. And they learn so much from, you know, they really are like picking up everything you do. So you're not going to do it perfectly every time. But I just keep coming back to that thing of, you know, can I interact differently? Can I ask my kid for a cuddle when they're screaming and having a tantrum, as opposed to screaming in their face and making it even worse?
So let's talk about your book, Joe. Fitter, Healthier, Happier. Now, as far as I remember, apart from Burpee Bears, which was a picture book, this is your first kids' book. Is that right?
Yeah, it's my first like non-fiction children's book aimed at sort of, say, 6 to 12-year-old kids who are sort of learning about, you know, themselves, learning about the human body. So it's a lot of it to do with kind of the systems in the body. So the muscular system, the digestive system, musculoskeletal system. So quite educational in a sense. Then I talk about the importance of diet and nutrition, how certain foods affect our mood and our energy. So nice, gentle kind of introduction to nutrition. And then there's a section all around the mind and looking after yourself. So it could be around breathing, around meditation, around mindfulness and sort of dealing with feelings of anxiety and stress, which a lot of children are experiencing. I talk about screen time, you know, devices, getting a better sleep routine. Like, as a parent, you'd really be happy. If you saw your kid reading this, you'd be really happy because the information they're going to get is very uplifting. It's very inspiring. And it's all about, you know, learning about your body and mind and looking after yourself.
Yeah, it's so good. It's like, I just think the way you've broken it up into those different sections, it's really easy for kids to like just dip into and learn some facts that they can then, you know what kids are like. My kids love repeating facts that they've learned. So it's so good. But I think PE's had a bit of a reputation overhaul over the years. Like when we were kids, it had a really bad reputation. Like I would have done anything to get out of doing PE.
Oh, we used to forge notes to get out of PE and sign, you know, like write it and try and get it in your mum's hand and forge it. And I think I had a period a week at secondary school so that I didn't have to do PE and all those sorts of things. You know, you'd do anything to get out of it, wouldn't you?
But it does feel like it's changed. Like my kids love PE. And I think that it feels like you've definitely been on a bit of a mission, Joe, to try and rebrand it as something fun. Would you say that's a fair analysis?
Yeah, I think sport and exercise should be fun. And I think it really comes down to how children are introduced to it, right? Are you in a really hyper-competitive sports school where if you're not doing the best and winning, you're a loser and it's not worth doing it? And I just think children need to be like encouraged and supported. And I don't think, you know, necessarily competitive sport is always the answer for people. It might be, you know, offering something different. Classes can do dance and yoga and HIIT workouts and, you know, like just hiking or anything different. I think there's a pressure for children to be super athletic and super like performing at a high level. But I was never a talented athlete. I just love sport because I really enjoyed the physicality of it and moving my body and getting stronger and obviously like dealing with my crazy childhood that I was going through. But yeah, you know, in this book, I talk about all these things. I talk about activities you can do. There's little facts. There's quizzes. There's, you know, little homework you can do in your bedroom. Have a little stretch. Do a little twist. You know, it's not like you've got to be doing structured, regimented training every day. But it's just all movement is good for you. And as a young person, if you can tap into that and realize that if you're anxious and you're going to school with negative feelings and you're overwhelmed, like you have this amazing thing at your disposal called exercise and movement to release some of that from your body. And yeah, I think it should be fun. And I think sometimes it's just like one wonderful PE teacher can transform the whole school, you know, or one passionate head teacher who really promotes activity, or even a dinner lady or someone who's like a teaching assistant to say, right, come on, kids. I know it's a bit wet, but let's get out and have a little work, you know, have a little run around, or let's go for the, you know, daily mile. These things are really small, but they actually make a huge impact on the children.
But I love the fact the book is also as focused on the brain and looking after your brain in the same way that you look after the rest of your body. I think as the parent of an almost teenager, that bit is what struck home with me, is that you're doing something to help them realise, first of all, that physicality can help with the mental stuff, but also how important it is to focus on the mental stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's going to be more challenging as you go into those teen years, and I'm really aware of that. So I think it's about trying to set them up with the tools that they can turn to. So yeah, it's not just about exercise; it's about communication, it's opening up, it's mindfulness, it's breathing, it's relaxing, it's trying to like step away from the chaos and the addiction of devices and social media, so that you can self-regulate and calm yourself down just by having an hour a day where you're not on your phone, or having, you know, a conversation with your mum, or ringing up your nan, or someone you used to love and speak to and hang out with, and now you don't. Like, I really believe in all these things. I believe that, you know, sleep's so important, family's important, like, you know, connecting, rather than just be, you know, Snapchat and TikTok and stuff. Like, actually, you might feel close to your friends, but you're probably not, because you're not seeing them. So I believe that, you know, you've got to be more human, like interact with people again. And I think it's becoming harder, isn't it, for kids these days, because everyone just wants to be on their phones the whole time.
Yeah, it's really hard. Now, you're clearly somebody who, you know, lives and breathes this stuff. What are the stuff that you're doing with your kids at home to teach them all of this, but just in like a day-to-day routine? Like, I saw there was an Instagram video recently of you and Marley doing pull-ups together. Is that kind of like a regular occurrence where you're just hanging out, doing exercise with them?
Yeah, well, look, I'll be honest with you, right? Nothing stimulates my children more than Disney Plus and the PlayStation, right? Nothing gets them more excited than knowing, like, I can have half an hour on the PlayStation, or let Indy wants to watch princess films on Disney. So it will always be they don't have iPads, right? So the only thing I have an iPad for is for an app for the piano. She's learning the piano. But I really try and stimulate them with, like, activities, because I know that otherwise, you know, and I'm someone who wants to be busy and wants to be working, but I also know that I've got to put in the effort for them, because they don't want to be out. They don't want to be out in the rain and running around and going out on their bikes and playing football. But I'm the one that says, come, we've got to do this. We've got to do this together. So, you know, I'll do things like, you know, boxing pads with Indy, or a little bit of football with Marley. But I'm talking little like 15, 20 minute blasts. I'm not like out doing PE lessons all day long. But I think those little moments where you just get out of the house, get some fresh air, they make a huge difference on their behavior, on their focus, on their energy. But yeah, you know, I think it's about making it fun. And like, I don't push my kids, but I give them opportunities. So like little things, like I've got a little guitar and a little keyboard. And I've said, look, it's there. Do you want to give it a go? And it took a while. And now we sit together. But again, like, I think with children, what I've come to realize is you get out what you put in. You know, if I gave Marlon the PlayStation over Christmas time, and like within a few days, I could not believe how he was navigating around the controller, playing this game called Astro's Playroom on the PlayStation. Like, it blew my mind. So if I give Marley an iPad, he's going to get very good at an iPad. If I give Marley a PlayStation, he becomes amazing at using the PlayStation. So, you know, the reason Indy is learning Spanish is because I'm sitting with her for 20 minutes teaching her Spanish. And the reason Marley is getting good at football is because I'm out there in the rain when it's freezing cold and pissing down. Because I said, Marley, like, the only way to get good at something is by practicing. And so I see the impact that role modeling has on children. And I know it's hard when you're really busy and you've got loads going on, but you've got to find those little 10, 15 minute windows to get your kids doing something that's active, that's physical. I really think it's so important, the role modeling side of it.
It's impressive.
Now, speaking of Instagram, Joe, I have to ask about that photo.
Oh, I know what you're going to ask me about. Do you know what? Firstly, I didn't know before I posted that I even was
going to... That towel is low, man. It's low. And it got a lot of attention. So go on. What's it like when something like that goes viral? Obviously, you didn't expect it to. And I presume you had no idea when you posted it that it was going to go... You should have had an idea, but you didn't, that it was going to go quite so mad.
Look, firstly, for the record, like, I have a little trim down there, right? It's not completely au naturel, but in this photo, it looked like I had a right old bush going on, right? Because the towel's a little bit low. You could see my line. And the truth is, I actually laughed so... Because when I posted, I wasn't thinking, oh, this is going to get loads of comments and loads of people are going to recognise that and zoom in and, you know, be zooming the photo. But Mark Wright wrote a really funny comment that Admi and Stitzy wrote. Mark, he goes, Wixie boy, you got to trim the gangster. And I was laughing. And some of the comments in there from people, like, you know, zooming in and all that. But look, I didn't plan on it. It was silly. And, you know, I've had a trim since. So, yeah, it's not like that now.
I think my favourite comment was, we're all pregnant now.
Oh, yeah. And they said, I can see why Rose is always pregnant. But yeah, look, of course, look, I don't do it all the time, but every now and again, because I think it's important, like, as a parent and as someone who's got three kids and who's running a business, like, to show that I'm not just saying it on Instagram. Like, I do live this life. I do eat treats. I do have a night out, but I'm still fit and healthy because I make decisions that help me stay lean, that help me stay strong. And so, you know, every few months I'll drop a picture like that, but it's my Instagram's not really about me doing top.
Well, next
selfies.
Time, just pull the towel up a bit, yeah.
Pull the towel up, yeah. But just for the record, I always text my brother because Nicky's my CEO, he's my brother, he's my best friend, and I said, look, I'm going to share this picture. Is it all right? And he went, yeah.
Oh, it's his
fault.
And didn't
say nothing. Then? And then everyone was going, oh, well, you can see your bikini line and all that. I was like, oh, bloody hell, but yeah, it was quite funny.
Let's blame Nicky. Wendy, I feel like you've lowered the tone there, so let's just try and get it back up again.
Always. Sorry.
Joe, you clearly cook a lot at home and, you know, we see you cooking with your kids and cooking really interesting, yummy food for your kids. But do your kids actually eat everything that you cook for them? And if so, how do you manage it? What is the secret to getting them to eating everything that you cook?
I'm going to do a live on this soon because I'm so passionate about it. But it's one of those things, it's hard to talk about because it's very triggering for people. Same when you talk about sleep, right? You know, you need more sleep, get more sleep. It's very difficult to hear that when you're a parent with, like, young kids. But the truth is, I'm super passionate because I care about young children's health. And I had a very unhealthy diet as a kid. So it's not the end of the world. Like, honestly, my diet was 95% ultra-processed foods. My mum didn't know how to cook. She didn't fail me. Like, she just, that's all she knew, you know? And so I was super hyperactive. There's no doubt the food I was eating affected my behavior at school and my energy. And so from what we know now about diet, I just try and lead by example. So although I don't say, do this, do that, cut this out. I try to show the recipes that I cook, you know, the family meals I eat together and, like, the cooking side of things with them to show that actually you can bring kids into the picture a little bit. The simple truth is there's only one option. There's only one meal that I put on the table. So my children, they don't dictate to me how much iPad time, how much TV time they get. I decide. And it's the same with the food. I decide what I'm putting on the table. And sometimes, you know, they won't like it or they say, oh, it's not my thing. But 9 times out of 10, they'll go away, play for an hour, and they come back and eat the food. So I think the most important thing is one option. And the second thing is don't depend on snacks. Like, we've been convinced and we've been lied to that we need to be eating snacks all the time, right? That we need to feed our kids X, Y, Z, blah, blah, blah. But the truth is, if I give my kids snacks, even if I give them a banana or some healthy stuff, like some nuts or, you know, some rice cakes or peanut butter, if I give them to that when they come home from school, they've come in from, you know, being outside, they're not going to eat their dinner an hour later.
Yeah.
They appetite, their stomachs are tiny. So the two rules I would give, the two bits of advice is cook and eat one thing together as a family. Don't allow them to dictate what they're going to eat. And the second thing is don't depend on snacks. Like, let them build up an appetite. Genuinely, let them get hungry, because then when you put a nice curry or bolognese or, you know, make a stir fry on their table, they, you know, they will eat the food. They'll be so much more inclined to eat the food. And so, yeah, I'm going to talk about that a little bit more and hopefully get people like inspired a little bit with it.
So what's next, Joe? Prime Minister, is there anything left for you to actually do? You wouldn't be able to wear the towel if you were Prime Minister, but what are you going to do next? More babies.
I mean, I'm just passionate. More babies, yeah. I just love, you know, I see my job as this, right? I see my job as this. I want to get people feeling good, right? And I think that comes from two things. I think it comes from movement and from nutrition and the food we eat. So I just try and share recipes that can inspire. I share workouts that, you know, obviously got the Body Coach app, which is a subscription. It's a paid for thing. But beyond that is all my free content. I still share loads of workouts on YouTube every week. I try to make it accessible. And ultimately, yeah, I just want to keep doing that. If I can impact and influence people in a positive way, and same with the parenting, if I learn something that I really value and I find helpful, I try to share it so that other people can go, oh, maybe I could try that with my kids. And, you know, everything I ever do is always from a positive place. I'm always trying to, you know, act with kindness as opposed to criticize and judge and make people feel like they're not doing a good job, because there's so much confusion around that with social media these days that you feel like, I'm failing my kids. Everything I'm doing is wrong. The food's wrong. But ultimately, I don't want to be part of the problem. I want to be part of the solution. So I try to focus on the positive things. So yeah, I'm going to keep doing that. Keep exercising. Keep trying to inspire people, and, you know, just be a good role model as a dad and as a husband, and hopefully as a fitness coach online, so I can reach more people in the future.
Sounds brilliant. Well, Jill, a massive, massive thank you for coming back to chat to us. It's been so, so great.
Thank you so much. And yeah, love what you do. I think it's great. And yeah, really inspiring. So thanks for having me on the podcast again.
Thanks, Joe. Bye.
Thank you.
Have a great day. Thank you.